Travis Elliott and Lauren Ekstrom are a married couple bringing yoga everywhere. Travis is a world-renowned yoga and meditation teacher and author. He teaches his signature holistic yoga flow classes in Los Angeles and in workshops, festivals, and retreats around the world. His style is intensely dynamic and has inspired many of today's top athletes, celebrities, and entertainers. Most recently, Travis has become passionate about spreading yoga and meditation inside maximum security prisons. This work has proven to bring light to the darkest of places. Lauren Ekstrom is a Yoga Alliance certified yoga teacher, certified mindfulness meditation instructor, and mentor. She guides some of the most well-known musicians, filmmakers, executives, and Fortune 500 companies in both yoga, meditation, and overall wellness. Lauren leads holistic yoga flow workshops, retreats, and teacher trainings in the Los Angeles area and internationally. Together, they are the creators of Inner Dimension TV, a website they like to call the Netflix of yoga. Travis just released his new book, A Journey into Yin Yoga. They have a number of new workshops coming up at the beginning of the year, and it is my pleasure to have them in the studio. Hi, Travis and Lauren. Thanks for taking the time to be here.
Thanks for having us.
I want to start with you, Travis, and I want to talk about when were you first introduced to yoga, and did it change your life? If it did, how?
I was first introduced to yoga back in 2003 in Santa Monica, California. And that first class that I went to was absolutely life-changing because it was physical, mental, emotional, soulful. And it really brought me back to this place of who I felt like I was when I was a kid, when I was free and awake and spontaneous and playful and creative and powerful. So that felt really good. It felt like I was having a homecoming of sorts. So I was addicted from the get-go. And couldn't get enough of it. It was like I was, you know, had been trekking through the Sahara Desert, completely dehydrated, and finally found an oasis in the middle of the desert and just needed to really nourish myself through the practices of yoga.
What class did you first stumble upon? And was it intentional or was it just kind of like by accident? Or did
it was definitely not intentional. You know, I was working at a hotel back then, and I had a coworker who was talking about yoga all the time. And he would be like, Travis, you got to come to yoga with me. And I would be like, no, thanks, dude. I'm not
right
into it. You know, because I had this crazy stigma as to what yoga was. So
it can be intimidating.
Yeah,
very.
You know, like I just pictured, you know, like the teacher would look like Moses with a big beard. And, you know, I felt like I would be completely out of place. And so.
Or judged.
And judged, yeah.
Judgment.
And judged and feeling like I didn't belong in the room. And the reality was completely different than the stigma that I had in my head. And I showed up at this class with a teacher named Govindas. And he was amazing, and the class was amazing. It was accessible. It was, again, just powerful on so many levels. Like, you can't find a modality out there where you're taking care of so many different things all at once. I'm grateful to Govindas for being the teacher that showed me the way into this new, exciting world of yoga.
And was that at Power Yoga?
Monica Power Yoga above Radio Shack, what they call Dance Home.
That's right.
And that's the same spot that like Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers used to rehearse dance moves in. Carlos Castaneda, the great writer, used to do shaman workouts in there. So, you know, the vibes and the wood and the walls there has a real special Shakti to it. So it's very simple and plain, but also extremely magical. And, you know, I'll never forget that place.
Does Govindas know how much he touched your life?
He should, you know, every time I tell the story, I've mentioned his name. Every time, you know, I write a book, I give credit where credit's due. So I hope he knows. I'm sure he does.
And he's over at Bhakti now, right?
He is. Down he's the at the Bhakti Yoga Shala, and sometimes I get to run into him on the corner of Santa Monica Boulevard in Arizona. And I'm like, hey, what's up, Govindas? What's up, Travis? And we'll be there talking and chatting. So we kind of feel like, I would say, soul brothers at this point.
Yes. Yeah. You two seem about the same age, even, I would say.
Well, he's older than me. A little bit older. So I don't appreciate that comment.
It must be the yoga. Yeah, all those yoga. Sorry.
No. We definitely could be brothers. He would be the older brother, though. And I would be the younger brother.
We have that on record.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're still teaching in Santa Monica.
I am. I teach it. Still teach at Power Yoga, but I teach at the other location on 2nd Street, and I also teach in Venice at a place called the Yoga Collective.
Nice. That's where I first took your class at Power Yoga.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
Yep. I was probably terrified, like everyone is when they're walking into their first yoga class.
Yeah.
But my experience was like yours, not completely the opposite afterwards. And you know, just in so many ways. I wanted to ask you too, Lauren, about your first yoga experience and if it was life-changing.
Well, it's always funny to hear Travis retell his story because really inadvertently we share a very similar story. I was in college and I had actually started having panic attacks and felt this really crippling arrival of anxiety seemingly out of nowhere. And my mom said, you know, why don't you go to yoga? And I knew what yoga was. She had always kind of woken up in the morning and done these VHS tapes with this guy named Brian
VHS, Kess. I love it. Oh, with Brian.
Yes,
Power.
With Brian.
Power Yoga, okay.
And she would knock on my door in the morning and say, you know, do you want to come do yoga with me? And as a teenager, you know, you pull the covers back up over your head. Like, are you crazy? Get away from my door. And finally, I knew that I needed to go do something because the only other alternative was going to be going to see a doctor who was really just going to suppress symptoms. And there was something much deeper that was
actually... And possibly medications.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And my father had been medicated his whole life, and I knew I didn't want that to be my first step or action.
Right.
So I went to Power Yoga East, where a bunch of kids who I went to college with were going and practicing. And as college kids, it was donation-based, and I was putting myself through college and simultaneously working. So
affordable,
donation
accessible.
Sounded like, oh, I could actually do that. And I went alone, totally terrified. It's like going to your first dance class if you're not a dancer. And I felt all this fear about, am I not going to know the steps? Am I going to hold people up? Am I going to make a fool of myself? Am I going to stand out or impede the pace of the class? And all of this nervousness. And I climbed up those green carpeted stairs up into Power Yoga. And there's a man who's been there for years taking care of that space, George, with his long beard.
Yes.
And he took one look at my yoga mat and was like, that will not do. And he took my yoga mat and gave me another one and said, we're going to trade. I'll keep this one for rent, but you need to have this one instead. And it was Govindas's class.
Oh, wow.
And
so you both had Govindas at different times in your life as your first yoga class.
Yeah, and mine was probably 2 years later than Travis. I probably started going to class around 2004.
Okay.
And I hated it. It was really hard. And all of these older people who would have been my elders at the time were so strong and lowering themselves to the floor so gracefully. And I was not strong. I was not flexible. And I'm falling down into a heap. And it brought me face to face with all of the things inside of me that were really asking to be addressed. The narrative of not good enough, all of those different internal narratives that really had been suppressed for so many years. And at the very end of class, I remember laying down on the floor, just so grateful that I had survived this first experience. And then they started singing. Govinda started playing the harmonium and Radha was there and started singing and playing the flute. And it just felt like years of layers, not just of tension, but really sorrow and pain started to melt away. And I don't know when I went back. I just know that I did. And I would go long stretches. I would go for a period of time, and then I wouldn't go for a long time because it took time to get there, and then the time for the class, but also the challenge of having to really sit with yourself.
Right.
And take a look at all of these inner voices and places of self-judgment that were not going to really be allowed in that space without you confronting them. But I kept going back over time, and eventually, after a few years, I started going to Travis's class, and that was really how we met, was that someone dragged me to his 7 a.m. class. I was like, all right, let's do this. And that was probably about 13 years ago.
Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
Why did George give you a different mat?
I can't remember. I think that the mat that I had must have been really thin.
Oh.
And I think he just
thought...
Did he
give you a thicker one?
Yeah, a little bit. It was still a sticky mat. And it was my... They're still my favorite mats to practice on. Even now, you know, now you've got all these fancy mats and these expensive
designs
mats.
On them.
Designs
and their
materials. And all sorts of things. And I still love just a regular $20 sticky mat. Yeah. But yeah, he just... I don't know. I think it's the kindness that's in his heart for caring for all the people who are there.
Yes.
And it was a very sweet gesture.
It is making another step at making people feel welcome mm-hmm. as they're entering the room, or you know, being new to that practice. It can be scary.
And the thing that keeps you coming back is that felt sense of community. You know, this is something that for myself and Travis, we spend a lot of time talking about. That it's
inclusion.
And seeing familiar faces and a teacher who remembers you, and then mm-hmm. that other person who's always there and you don't know their name, but they say hi, and you know, you start to build that sense of community. And that's something that I think socially right now as a collective we're really lacking and really yearning for.
Absolutely. And I, for as great as social media is, I think it also isolates us and mm-hmm. makes us feel like we're included when we're really not getting that that fulfillment, you know, as face-to-face mm-hmm. contact and feeling that way. I should mention that you and Travis are married.
Yes.
You're a married partner in crime, couple duo. You've been serving not only the U.S., but on a world level everywhere with your practice. What I wanted to go into and talk a little bit about next is your work that you've been doing in the prisons. That's really deep work. You're dealing with not just, I don't want to say the average person, you know, who's, you know, going to school, because we all have our deep issues that we're working with. But on top of our issues, these people are now incarcerated. And how is that work? And what led you there? How did you even think to, I want to take yoga here?
Well, it all starts usually with an invitation, you know. I mean, you get invited to come to these places. So we are invited to go teach at this Maine State Prison, which is a maximum security prison.
You got invited through people who had heard about your work and how you work?
Yeah, there's a great organization called the Liberation Institute, run by a couple people that have become friends of ours, actually, now, named Jess and Piers. And they have been doing these trainings inside of the prison. And so they have an organization called the Liberation Institute. And the Liberation Institute reached out to Lauren and asked if we would come and teach yoga. And it just so happened that we were already teaching in Maine.
Oh, wow.
And doing a workshop there. So, you know, we really felt like we should go do this, even though we were really, really scared. And Lauren, for years, has been talking about really finding a way that she can give back.
Mm-hmm.
And feeling this, like, pull to, like, be of service, you know. In
yes.
yoga, we call it karma yoga, or the yoga of selfless action. So when they reached out to her, she lit up like a Christmas tree and was like, we got to do this, we got to do this. And so we made it happen.
And how long have you been working there?
We've been there twice now.
Okay.
So we were there this past spring, and we went taught 2 days there. The first day we were there for 9 hours all day, and then the second day we were there for 8 hours.
Wow. And are you seeing different groups come in at different times, kind of like they're coming in to take turns to
It's take mostly class? The same group of people. They have a group of people inside the prison that are actually doing a 200-hour training and a 300-hour advanced training.
So they offer that.
They do through the Liberation Institute. So the Liberation Institute has these ongoing trainings, really spearheaded by this woman, Jessica. And she just brings in guest teachers like ourselves to come in and do these special workshops.
Wow. What was your biggest hesitation, or was there one, going into this?
I mean, I think for me, it was the unknown, you know? Like, you have no idea. We had never done a training, and mm-hmm. they also didn't tell us ish about what was going to happen when we went inside the prison, you know?
Right, so like, yeah, what does happen? Do you guys get secure? I mean,
well,
right?
You drive to the middle of nowhere, you know, and then you park your car, and you're, like, in front of this huge prison, you know, like, just like you see in documentaries and movies, like this building with these fences.
No windows, fences, cold.
Yeah, barbed wire fences, you know, galore. And it's like, whoa, this is the real deal. And you walk up to the door where the main building is. They budge you in there. You're in the lobby. And then the, you know, your contacts meet you in the lobby. We were fortunate to meet, like, the warden. He was there to greet us. And then you sign in. You leave your cell phones and your ID at the front desk. You go through security, through an X-ray security screen. And then they take you through these buzz doors, these series of doors. And then they give you this little black box with a big red button on top of it. So it kind of looks like a pager, and it's called a man down button. So if something happens, you press the button, and like a SWAT team, they come in there to rescue in a case of an emergency. So
sure.
We're getting these man down buttons, and we're like, what the hell did we get ourselves into?
What did we sign
or at least
up for?
That's what I was thinking,
absolutely.
You know? And I didn't know when we walked into the room, I didn't know what the room would look like, you know, and I didn't know if the prisoners would be separated from us or would we be together. And we walked into this big, huge room, and then 20 prisoners just came beelining straight over to me and Lauren. So your fight or flight system is
sure.
Because you've never been in this situation.
No.
Now you have 18 men coming right at
yes.
you. And at first it was like you're in survival and stress mode, fight or flight. But then as soon as they got close to us, you saw the biggest smiles of gratitude on their face. And you saw their eyes lit up with love. And you have this idea of who these men are going to be. And it just like we were talking about the first yoga class, the stigma is not in alignment with the reality of what's really happening. These are guys that you feel like you grew up with in your neighborhood. Mm. You know, these are guys that you feel like you went to school with. These are guys that you've been like, you know, best friends with. Or, you know, maybe they look like one of your past boyfriends. Like, they're familiar people that look just like you and me, and
that's a stigma we have too. That
yeah.
these people behind bars are big bad monster.
Exactly,
you know,
they're
monsters
not
that just want to create crime everywhere.
Exactly. No, they were so beautiful and
sensitive, hurt, maybe people with pain like we've all experienced, but this journey in life led them somewhere else. But
well, they're just a victim of mm-hmm. of their upbringing. These are guys, most of them, that have grown up in households where all they knew was abuse and violence.
Mm-hmm.
And they never were exposed to anything positive or loving, you know. That's not even in their realm or their sphere of awareness. And so they became a product of their environment, and then one bad decision landed them inside, you know, a maximum security prison. Just one bad choice, usually fueled by drugs or alcohol, you know, landed them in prison.
Yeah. No, that's a great breakdown and assessment of it. What has been the biggest turnaround that you've seen? Just you saying their eyes lit up and they smiled at you is, do you think it's part of the energy you give off as well? Safe, loving?
You know, I think Lauren and I, when we went in there, we very soon looked at these men as beautiful souls and not as prisoners, and that's very rare for them because they're constantly surrounded by guards and people that are looking at them like animals in a cage.
Less than.
And we didn't look at them like that, you know. We didn't see them like that. So
people.
Yeah, they really are the beautiful, beautiful, beautiful people that deserve deserve access to real rehabilitation. And as the warden said to me, you know, he's very progressive and open to, you know, new ways of rehabilitation. You know, it's not sustainable to have these guys be in prison, get released, recommit crimes, and then come back in. You know, it bogs down the whole system because it costs them $40,000 per prisoner per year. So if you have, you know, 1,000 prisoners, what is that, $4 million a year just to, you know, have these prisoners be held in prison? It's not sustainable. So they're looking for real legitimate ways to transform these guys from the inside out.
Wow. Right. That's painful. So painful to get out, to have to go back in because you don't have access to any more tools, just the same tools you've always known, which is not good ones. What has been the biggest turnaround you've seen, Lauren, since doing this work, and how did it affect you?
I think that there are a few stories here, and it's just really important to remember that we're all one bad decision away from being in the same place. And it's also a reminder of our privilege. If you were privileged to grow up with even one parent who demonstrated love or an education, that these things are tremendous privileges, and we need to acknowledge them, and it's from that place that then we need to go out and be of support. And there are really two, I mean, all of them have had tremendous turnarounds in that this has woken them up and given them tools to say, oh, I can put a space between what is happening to me and my next action.
Yes.
And that takes time and practice to build. One of the men, which is really, he was the catalyst for why we were there, was considered really the worst offender and inside of the facility and causing a lot of trouble within the population and had been put into solitary confinement. And while he was in solitary, it's a horrible thing that we do to people. They're in a tiny, tiny room, 23 hours a day, 5 days a week, 24 hours a day, 2 days a week.
Oh my goodness.
With the permission to be outside in a small cage 1 hour for 5 days. And what that does to someone psychologically is horrible. It's an absolute nightmare. And he finally bubbled up to a place where he couldn't take it anymore and attempted to take his own life. And when he was returned back to the facility, he was returned back to solitary. And inside of solitary, the facility had inserted computer screens into the solitary units that are covered by a protective plexiglass, and they're preloaded with certain content that the prisoners are allowed to watch. And one of the things that's been preloaded on there for them is the DVD that Travis created and I helped produce called The Ultimate Yogi, which is a 108-day yoga program. And he got back to his cell and he turned on the screen and he found Travis's yin yoga practice. And he said in that moment, it saved his life. And he started doing yoga every single day and carved into the ground a mat with a razor blade because he couldn't have an actual mat. So he charted one out on the floor.
Oh.
And started doing yoga day in and day out, and it completely revitalized his perspective on his behavior and what he was in control of, which is really just himself. And they didn't have all of the classes on there, and he started pushing for it. You know, there seems to be more classes here. He's talking about a program. And finally, they got all the classes loaded up. And when other people were struggling, he encouraged them to start doing the practice. It'll save your life. Get on your mat. You know, start to breathe. When he was released from solitary, he was part of the reason why these yoga teachers started coming in and started a 200-hour program. And now he's been certified as a 200-hour yoga teacher. He's in the midst of his 300-hour, and he goes back into solitary several times a week and teaches yoga to the people who are still there and giving them these tools and these skills so that they won't reoffend while they're in there and can come out sooner and have skills when they rejoin general population to be able to eventually make the transition. And so our hope is that he will put together a program that can then be replicated throughout facilities across the country, is really, I think, what the Liberation Institute and we and several other people who are trying to support hope to see. And there's another person who is part of the same program. He's now going through his 200-hour training. And he finished his undergrad. Now he's getting his master's degree and working in the realm of restorative justice.
Wow.
And hoping to start his PhD before he leaves.
That's amazing, because this is giving a voice to the voiceless. You know, it's speaking for people that aren't capable or able to speak for themselves. And you're giving them keys to unlock these doors inside of themselves.
And keys to unlock each other inside of finding a place of community within these walls mm-hmm. that otherwise often prevent this level of connection mm-hmm. and an opportunity for them to be able to drop their own internal walls and to have a safe space to look at each other and to be able to say, maybe for the first time in their lives, to another man, I love you. Mm-hmm. And how powerful that healing is. You know, we go in to this space and all of the labels fall away. You know, they're not students, we're not teachers, we're not outsiders, they're not prisoners. And the truth is, every time we walk through those doors or write a letter or get a letter, they are teaching us. Mm-hmm. And it is not nearly enough for us to go in and provide some master classes and some deeper education on mindfulness and yoga philosophy and sequencing classes. They are re-gifting in return, not just their stories, but their inspiration. And they're so poetic and they're so insightful. And the things that they come forward and share stay with you for a lifetime. I mean, these are our teachers, and I envision that these men will be in our lives for the rest of our lives. And there's no question about that.
Wow. Wow. Do you think it's the first time for some that they're hearing I love you? Or they can look at another person? I mean, it's hard to know for sure, but just, or it's been a very, very long time since they've been able to receive I love you or give an I love you, and the power in that.
No question. They have shared quite intimately that it is the first time that they've been able to express it themselves in a long time. Or I think especially when you're talking about a maximum security prison, as a man going into a facility like that, and this is my interaction at this point, so I can speak to it from that perspective, that you don't necessarily think it would be safe enough to be able to embrace each other at that level. And so for them to be able to turn to each other and have that kind of love expressed, it is the first time for many of them, probably in decades.
And that is so healing. It is so healing. And that's something that yoga did for me as well. It unlocked and started to really open that door that I was searching for of self-love and learning about that relationship. And I think that's important for everybody. More important for those who have never really experienced, you know, as Travis was saying, a loving or kind upbringing or home. You say they'll be in your lives, as you can tell, for, you know, ever, indefinite. Do you see them going on to, because they've known what maybe prisons need, giving back and, as I mentioned earlier, giving a voice to the voiceless, are they wanting to spread outside of Maine? Are they wanting to go more national? Are they able to?
So we're still at a point right now, and obviously this is all, the Liberation Institute is really heading this up, and Jess and Piers, since they're right there, looking at what is the transition when the time comes. And that time period is going to be within the next 4 to 7 years that some of this first cohort will be exiting the facility, and they want to teach. They want to spread these teachings. These teachings have saved their lives from the inside, and they absolutely want to be able to go out in the world and share these practices. It's been transformative. And we don't know what that looks like yet, but our work in coordination, really just in support of the Liberation Institute, will be helping to facilitate that however best we can. I think our hope is that they will find studios to teach at, that they will be able to, if they want to go back into other facilities and teach, they can. But to really, when you think about what's powerful in this lifetime, it's the power of story. And having a teacher who's been where some of these men have been, not just behind bars, but long before that in their lives, and to be able to say that you can fundamentally be at the darkest place in the world and not be defined by that, and actually overcome that and rediscover unconditional love, not from outside but inside, and a philosophy that gives you a perspective for how to control what you can, which is really only your choices and your own path. I can't think of a more inspiring teacher to have than some of these men, and they've already been that for us. So we hope that they will continue to teach, and I know that they would like to, and we will have to work together as a community here, but also hopefully as a national community. And if there are any yoga studios out there who are listening and people who would be open to supporting men in this transition, we want to support them in making that a possible path.
I think that's also a stigma to a lot of women and men, but more men can be really terrified or intimidated by yoga. It's, you know, somebody, as you mentioned, going into a dance class, never knowing how to have, you know, dance technically. And what I remember about your class, Travis, is you made it so open and so welcoming, you, because you're a regular guy, and you're like a regular guy guiding us through like regular poses and movements, but yet there's something so much deeper going on. But to me, that was my experience. You made it very approachable, and I find that so unique and so universal. You know, no matter who you are, what you do. And it just felt very unique from other classes I've been in since then. What do you find unique and different about your class that allows you to be that way?
Well, I don't really know what other people are doing, so I don't really know what to compare my style to so much, you know. But I do know that my intention is to make it as accessible as possible to as many people as possible. I mean, I actually started teaching yoga after kind of 2 near-death experiences. One was a near-drowning experience, and then one was I was in the tsunami in Thailand in 2005.
Oh, my goodness.
And after those 2 close calls with death, I made a pledge to the universe that I would just spread yoga and meditation to, you know, as many people as possible. So there's a saying that says, you know, that the Dharma, and the Dharma is just another word for the truth or the teachings. The Dharma welcomes all. The Dharma turns nobody away. Doesn't matter what your income level is. Doesn't matter what your nationality, your ethnicity is, your gender is, your social status. These teachings deserve to be presented to everybody that's ready to receive them, really. And so I try and teach with that intention, you know, that, you know, you come to my class and I'm going to challenge you, and I'm going to give you a demonstration of tough love. It's not going to be easy, because I know the only way that you're going to grow is by challenging yourself. And then the more that you grow, the more that you can give. And the key to living is growing and giving. So, yeah, I mean, maybe it's just the intention of really wanting this to reach people in a way that is as accessible as possible.
Your close-to-death experiences, did yoga really settle in after that? Like, you were already on the path. You had already started taking your yoga classes, but the teaching, it just kind of solidified after, or?
Yeah, it did. You know, the first one, I almost died in Kauai after about 5 months of yoga practice. And after that experience, it definitely jolted me in a big, big way, where I started to, like, see things differently. I started to see, like, God, we as humans put our energy into all the wrong places, into the material stuff, when at the end of the day and the end of our lives, that's not really what really matters. What matters is, did you love well? Did you serve well? And did you live well? And, but, you know, we're stubborn creatures, and we have these habits that are programmed, into the neural architecture of our brains that are hard to unwire, you know, and to reprogram. They say that, you know, 95% of who you are after the age of 35 is programmed from your earlier childhood. So if you're not doing the work and you're not aware and conscious of the unconscious, you're basically just a slave to your program. So it started to wreak a little bit of havoc in my life after that near-death experience, because I started to become aware of some of the things that I was unconscious of. And if you turn a light on in a dark place, you're going to see all the shit in that dark place that maybe you didn't want to see, you know?
Right.
And that's confronting. And a lot of people, they'll flip the switch back off so that they don't have to deal with it and they can stay comfortable, you know. But if you keep moving down the path with courage and patience and persistency, then you start to slay the demons and slay the monsters. Or maybe it's better to say you develop a different relationship with them. And you actually start to bring compassion to those dark places within you. And that's what really heals you and transforms you. But it's not an overnight process. Even after a near-death experience, you know, it takes time. And I feel blessed that I had, you know, another opportunity to to be put up against the edge of living, you know, and facing death, because I needed that round two to really seal the deal. All right, I hear you, universe, loud and clear.
Yes.
Got the message. Now I'm going to go and just spread these teachings. I'm going to be of service to you and of service to the people that want these teachings. And it's as simple as that, really.
And where are you currently working, Lauren? Where are your
I teach your over
studios?
At the Yoga Collective as well on Rose in Venice. And I teach mindfulness. I teach meditation practices at Unplug Meditation. And then I work a lot on a corporate level. So I've spend time going into places like Google or Live Nation and big companies and talking about how these practices can come and support us inside of these different systems and inside of taking care of ourselves despite having no work-life balance. You know, obviously there's no such thing. And how do we still initiate self-care despite the pace that the world works at?
And I'm sure in corporate you see so much of it because there's so many deadlines and the pressure. Pressure at a company like Google can be probably terrifying and debilitating sometimes.
And it puts us back into a space of remembering what is really important. And I think that these practices help to support people in that wherever they are, whether that's someone who's incarcerated or that's someone who's working at a Fortune 50 company, that these practices have value. And I think the other place, you know, you can really find both of us is on Inner Dimension Media. We have an online streaming platform that streams yoga, but also meditation, and has all of our different programs. So no matter where somebody is at in their journey, whether they're brand new to meditation and have never done it before, we have an introductory program for them. If you're brand new to yoga, even if you're differently abled, we have some chair yoga practices, and then we have the really strong fiery stuff as well. So you can find a whole variety there online, and we're adding new content to that every month, and we add a new class every week.
And that's what I really wanted to talk to you guys about too, is are you creators?
Yes, so we founded Interdimension TV, and it's the online streaming platform, but really the bigger umbrella of what we do, we call it Interdimension Media, because we have a book that we wrote together. Travis has a new book that came out this year all about yin yoga, plus different albums. So that's the umbrella of our trainings and our retreats. And then inside of that, you can find our online streaming platform where we're always creating new content. And then we have some additional teachers who come in and also teach. So you get different voices, not just our voices.
And this is, they can go to this link to just like a website and sign up.
It's basically, as Travis would say, like the Netflix of yoga.
And that's perfect.
The way he likes to describe it. So you can jump on there and you can pick a class that's 60 minutes or 15 minutes, depending on the time that you have. You'll find something to kind of fit the mood that you're in that day or the need that you're having that particular day.
And how do the classes work if I were to click on and say, I want to do yin yoga?
Click on yin yoga and then it pops up and then it plays and then you're practicing.
And it's classes that you guys have recorded that now you're just, it's ready to go.
It's ready
for different time.
We shoot every couple months, just a new round of content, and we shoot in, you know, urban locations, warehouses, and you know, we put a lot of energy into the production value of these videos. So it looks good. You know, some of the classes actually look so good, you might be tempted to lick the screen, you know? You know, it looks good, but hopefully, most importantly, it feels good when you do it, you know, because we want you to finish that Interdimension TV class feeling your best and to move into the rest of your day, like, you know, the best version of yourself.
It's so funny. I am actually living in LA, Santa Monica, anywhere in Los Angeles, but we have bus stops and there's always a lot of people at bus stops. And when I was going to yoga a lot back then, I would always think, gosh, I really want to start something called like bus stop yoga, where like people just bring their mats and while they're waiting for the bus stop, they just do yoga.
It's a good use of time. It's not a bad idea.
Right. Because a mat weighs nothing. I mean, it can be really heavy or it can be really light. If you have a light one, and then just throw your mat down and
start. I think you should start a bus stop Los Angeles movement. I think that would be very cool.
Right? Like, you guys could do that and record it at a bus stop.
Exactly.
Even people at the bus stop can, you know, carve out a little time to while you're waiting for your ride to do it. Tell me about the meditation aspect of it, because meditation is something I came into much later, after I started the physical practice of yoga. And it used to be the hardest part in Brian's class for me to sit there for 5 minutes or so and sit still and quiet and meditate. And I used to go through so many emotions. and then I started to love it. So yoga is so funny that way, because you know it's like medicine. You know it's good for you. It's better than medicine because you don't have to actually take it every, like a pill, but it's, you know, it's good for you. So tell me about meditation.
Well, it's interesting because meditation actually came into both of our lives, into Travis's life and my life, before the physical yoga practice did, that we both had started meditating at much younger ages. Travis's mother had introduced him through cassette tapes to guided meditations, and I had kind of found it on my own as an adolescent. And of course, as you grow up, you get away from those practices and other things seem much more interesting than meditating. But over time, you return to it. And I think what we find is that as people move their bodies, they're open to a deeper practice and become more comfortable in discomfort and know how to sit with themselves, know how to be with themselves. And so in terms of the meditation, our hope really is these are skills for daily living. that it's mindfulness of the body, it's mindfulness of the breath, but it's also mindfulness of how you move through the world. And so that's one piece of it. And then the other piece is also we can use these practices of paying attention in a certain way to become aware of deeply ingrained habits and programs, whether that's negative self-talk, as an example, and we can learn to reprogram that. We can build new connections in the brain and really see life in a new way, see ourselves in a new way, catch ourselves when we get stuck in that old way of being, and flip a switch so that we're not repeating the same patterns and repeating the same habits and repeating the same future over and over again. So you can go online and you can do the introduction course. And then we have ongoing practices, whether that's cultivating joy or Travis just did a five elements meditation, you know, and this waking up that all of these elements, yes, they're in our world, but they're also inside of us. And these practices really give us a deeper felt sense of connection, not just to ourselves, but really to the wider world that we're inhabiting. And right now we need more of that felt sense of connection. And it's from that connection that we're going to start to see more expansive healing, first within yourself, sitting down, doing your practice, healing those spaces on the inside. But then there's no question that that spreads. And you see that from people like us who fell in love with a practice, or people like you who are now interviewing and sharing so many different insights that are healing, or like the incarcerated men, they find these practices and then they want to go and they want to spread them through that population and beyond.
Are they able to now teach each other in within the prison?
Oh, yeah. They have regular classes.
Student becomes teacher, and teacher now teaches other students who may become instructors.
Yeah. I mean, this one guy that Lauren had referenced, he goes back to solitary regularly and teaches people back in solitary.
They allow him to go into solitary.
They do.
Amazing.
And we've been fortunate to go ourselves to solitary and teach classes back there as well. And these are the guys that are, you know, supposedly the baddest of the bad, the most misbehaved. And what's amazing about the guy that Lauren was talking about is, you know, and what the warden was so thrilled about was here was the most misbehaved guy out of 1,000 prisoners who got exposed to these teachings. And then within the span of about 3 months became the most benevolent of all the prisoners. And his transformation awakening began to spread throughout the prison. And now the whole ecology and the environment in the prison is changing. And that's why the warden is so thrilled, because this stuff, this just yoga and meditation, is changing his prison. And it's not really costing him a dime, because, you know, everybody's coming in there to donate their time and their energy to be with these men. So it's amazing. Like, these guys are, like, there's
really
this
amazing
whole group of guys expanding that have gotten the seed. And now they're going out and spreading the seed to the other prisoners.
And they teach each other, so they will continue to practice teaching that way. There's one, I think there's two of the guys actually, who go back into the mental health unit. So that's a very different unit even than the general population, or even than solitary.
How is that one different?
It's where people are housed who are dealing with different disorders, whether that's schizophrenia or other kind of mental breakdowns, which, you know, a lot of our prison population, these are people who have mental health issues, post-traumatic stress, and other many layers of trauma. And he's going back in there and teaching to this particular population. Two of the guys will now co-teach classes, because they've seen us. Travis and I will come in and we'll co-teach classes. So now they go back and forth and they team teach a class every week. And they teach a variety of classes. So it's not just regular power yoga classes. One guy teaches a yin class. Another guy is now teaching a beginner's class. So to try to introduce the practices to some of the population that hasn't been exposed to yoga before, and to help make it accessible to them.
Oh, that gives me chills. It really just makes my eyes get teary. And the power of giving these guys and all people, but, you know, especially these guys, a tool that was so powerful, that changed their life so completely, and building the confidence in these people, what they're capable of. Like you said earlier, they're not always used to being treated like a another human being, another person, and knowing that they've had this in them all along, and you kind of gave them a key, and he said, I'm going to unlock it. I mean, it's very big and moving on a whole humanity scale. And if you've touched this life, what is this life going to go and do?
Well, and it's a good like thing for everybody that's listening to ask themselves, like, if this is possible in prison, what's possible in your life? You know, where can you awaken? These practices are bringing light to the dark places of a prison. So if it can do that wonderful transformation on that level in a prison, what can it do in your own life? What can it do in your community? What can it do in this country? What can it do throughout this entire world? Mm-hmm. You know, it's unlimited as to what's possible.
And you have to be careful that there might be people who think like, well, these guys have nothing else to do, so of course they're going to do yoga. But this, again, it's a maximum security facility. And the last time we went into solitary, which was our second visit there, there was a young man who's starting to transition. And he saw us as we came back to teach another class, and he said hello, and he pointed to his heart, and he said, see, I kept coming, I kept showing up, I kept doing my practice. If you had told me that I was going to come into a maximum security facility and have my butt up in the air, that would have been the last thing I would have thought I would be doing here. But I'm showing up every single day.
It's a choice.
And it's a choice whether, you know, you're incarcerated or you're incarcerated in your own mind, in your own life. So choose to show up, choose to do your work.
And like you mentioned, they're still being faced within the practice of those deep, dark places we don't like to go, because that's the effects of doing the yoga practice and the work, is you, those things just come up and you have to deal with them. You're dealing with them in a safe place where you're able to have the tools to work through them during those moments. But that is huge, you know. And oh my goodness, there's so much I want to talk about and cover. Inner Dimension TV is online now. We're able to get meditation and yoga classes. Okay.
Yeah, and you know, very similar to what we've been talking about this conversation, it's called Inner Dimension for a good reason, because real change has to happen within, you know. And so our approach is, you know, let's give people a workout, but also a work in, and let's do the work of like really, really, really going inward, mm-hmm. and doing these practices so that we do become conscious of the unconscious, and we can no longer, you know, be a prisoner to our own programs that are running our lives. Just because you're not in prison doesn't mean that you might not be mm-hmm. a prisoner to your own negative habitual thought process that's keeping you enslaved in this pattern, and you feel like you're suffering and you're in a downward whirlpool of yes. negativity.
Do you think you're going to, I know it's being pushed through Liberation, have they moved anything into California or anywhere else other than Maine right now?
So separately, we've been working with a facility that's a minimum security facility here mm-hmm. outside of Los Angeles. And again, this is because they reached out. So we're, you know, in many,
right.
in many of these facilities, there are actually already a number of organizations and activists who are already in there and doing work.
That's wonderful.
Whether that's through theater, whether that's through okay. yoga. And, you know, so we come where we've been invited. And one young man runs a yoga group at this particular facility, and we've sent them our books and all these materials, and we're hoping to make a visit before the new year is really our goal. But we've been in communication for a year, and these things are complicated. There's a lot of bureaucracy, and understandably, materials need to be approved, and you need to make sure that the officials feel in support of it and okay with it. So it just takes time, and it's really part of our practice and being patient and helping to support everyone who's involved, the officials and the men who reach out alike. And I really hold the vision. I would like to start to see us working with some of the women's facilities as well. That's the biggest increase in incarcerated population that we have right now happens to be women. And most of the women who are incarcerated are coming from places of tremendous trauma. And also they often have children. And so they're separated in a very different way. Not that the men don't, but it's our biggest part of our growing incarcerated population. So my hope is that we can start working with some women's facilities soon, too.
That is so wonderful.
We've gotten emails from women that have been, you know, in prison that, you know, have said that the yoga DVDs save their life while they're in prison. So, you know, it seems that the universe is giving us this gift to get to, you know, teach in prisons. And I like to look at the prison in Maine. It's the prison of hope. Of what's possible.
Yes.
And I think that for Lauren and I both, we would love to spread what's happening there to as many other prisons in the world.
Not everyone can do it. And the fact that you guys have a heart and a calling and the capability, that's awesome. I'm not everyone, I think, feels called to do that kind of work.
We have a teacher, our meditation teacher, Jack Kornfield, and on his last birthday, he went and taught at San Quentin prison. And people were like, can you believe that Jack went and, you know, on his birthday, went and taught in prison? And we're like, yeah, we can't believe it, because like Lauren was saying earlier, it's a two-way street, this road of generosity and giving. We feel like we've gotten way, 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 way more back than we've given. So I would love to go in there on my birthday, you know, because
we basically went on mine this year.
We did. Yeah. We were
one day off
there for Lauren's birthday. And, you know, that first experience when we walked out of that prison on that first day after 9 hours, we both were simultaneously in a peak state of joy and also in a peak state of tears.
Yes.
Not bad tears, mm-hmm. but like tears of hope, really. Hope of what really, you know, we're huge fans of these teachings, but to see these teachings in that setting have that kind of impact took our faith in this practice to an infinite level.
We've had pretty privileged lives, and we acknowledge and recognize that, as have many of the people who practice yoga these days across the world and in the U.S. And you know, on a fundamental level, yoga has saved your life.
Yes.
It saved Travis's. It saved yours. Mm-hmm. In many ways, yes. It saved mine. And then you go into a place like this, and you see it saving these lives. And that brought us to our knees.
Because the stakes are so high there.
Oh my goodness.
You know, these some of these guys are in there for life because of violent crime. The stakes are incredibly high.
They know they may never get out, but they're still doing the practice, and they want to.
Yeah, I'll never forget.
Isn't that beautiful? That melts me.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when we were there that first day and we had lunch with the guys, like, you know, one guy's like, I haven't had a blueberry in 5 years. Another guy's like, I haven't had a raspberry in 7 years. And this Indian guy goes, I haven't had mango in over 20 years.
Thank you for sharing this right now. That really puts it into such perspective. Blueberry.
Just a blueberry.
Blueberry.
Or
something
mango.
We see at
we
the grocery
so
store.
For granted.
We see packets of them all the time at the grocery store.
They're used to processed food and
yes.
bread and, you know,
mm-hmm.
horrible food.
Mm-hmm. To get over
just a blueberry,
like you said, their stakes are so high, and to get through over those hurdles and through them. I hope more people are listening and invite you to go, because I understand what you're saying. It has to be everybody working together, the wardens to want better for their inmates and you know, and for humanity and people and who aren't afraid to empower them and give them those you know, keys to open themselves up. We're getting ready to wrap it up. They can find you in your classes over in Santa Monica physically. They can find you on Interdimension TV if they can't get to your classes physically and meditations. And we didn't get enough time to talk about your book that you just released, but I did want to talk about it, A Journey into Yin Yoga, authored by both Travis and Lauren. Can you give us a little bit about that? Where can we find it?
It's everywhere books are sold.
Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
People
still walk into bookstores.
Can
yes.
you believe it? Yeah, I knew I made it
Barnes
big
and
time.
Noble.
When I walked into a Barnes & Noble and saw the book, I was like, wow. Yeah, so it's a book about yin yoga, and it you know, yin yoga is the deep stretching part of yoga, but it also has a lot of stories and quotes and inspiration and a chapter on pranayama and meditation in there as well. So check it out.
Wonderful. And gives us tools for anxiety and things like that. Yin can be calming and relaxing.
Big time. Yeah, it switches you from your stress state into your rest, restore, repair state. So from sympathetic to parasympathetic.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome.
It's wonderful.
Because it's all in your body. You know, your body's the best pharmacy that ever was created.
And as you had mentioned earlier, Lauren, that yoga helped you navigate through those things. Did you find a large part of the book, did you touch on that aspect of it?
Well, the Yin Yoga book, that one was written just by Travis.
Okay.
We co-authored a book called The Holistic Yoga Flow, The Path of Practice. But yoga taught me how to be with myself in every state, whether that was a state that I was really enjoying or a state that I really wasn't enjoying. And yin yoga is confronting for people because you're doing one thing anywhere from 3 minutes up to 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And when you're holding any position, whether that's a seated meditation position or a deep stretch, you're getting into not just being with yourself, but in yin yoga, you're getting into your tissues, and the body really holds your history. So you learn how to move through those things with equanimity, with presence, with kindness, with patience and compassion. And so I think that the book really helps people to understand not just what the practice is, but really the science behind it and how they can apply it.
And you guys also have some workshops coming up.
Yeah, we'll be at 1440 Multiversity in January, which is a beautiful brand new retreat center here on the West Coast.
Oh, how fun.
It's gorgeous, and they're doing incredible things. So we'll be there for a New Year retreat, January 11th to the 13th, and that's just a great weekend getaway for people. And then we'll be in the UK in February doing some master classes at Jala Yoga, as well as a training.
And that's your next one coming up, the one in January?
The next one coming
up.
Okay, yeah.
That's
your next one. We'll also be in Portugal in May doing a week-long retreat there as well.
That is awesome. Oh my gosh, I want to do them all. I want to come to them all. Thank you guys so much for sharing with us what you do and what you are doing. It's so humbling, and it just... like you said, Travis, there's a lot of hope there, and that feels so good. Thanks again for coming in.
Thank you for having us. We can be here.